It's Wednesday, time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today, Denise Ross, web editor with the Mitchell Daily Republic. She's based in Rapid City. Denise, welcome back to the program.
It's good to be here, Carl.
Also here is Jonathan Ellis, reporter and news analyst with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And Jonathan, thanks for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me, Carl.
Well, the lead negotiators on a new farm bill said yesterday that a bill wouldn't be completed before January. Frank Lucas, chairman of the House Ag Committee, said Republicans will prepare a bill to extend the current law for 1 month. But Debbie Stabenow, the chairwoman of the Senate Ag Committee, said Democrats would not support an extension and would allow the current law to expire at the end of the year. Jonathan, why don't Senate leaders want a temporary extension?
Well, from what I've seen, I mean, they think that a temporary extension would be provide an incentive, perhaps, to not get a deal done in January. I mean, they think it's just unnecessary, frankly, to have that extension. You know, Tom Vilsack, the Secretary of the Department of Agriculture, has said that, you know, if Congress can reach a deal in early January, then, you know, there shouldn't be any problems. So, you know, from the Democratic perspective, not extending it perhaps gives them additional leverage just to get the long-term deal in place.
So if an agreement isn't reached, we're not going to fall off the so-called dairy cliff?
Well, if you believe Tom Vilsack, I mean, if they can deal with it, you know, deal with the issue when they get back in January, it shouldn't be too big of a problem.
Denise Ross, what are the sticking points in the farm bill negotiations? Still the food stamp programs?
Well, I tell you, I'm a little bit confused about that because I was on the conference call with Representative Kristi Noem last week when she said they had struck a deal on food stamps. And then I saw a report from a national publication somewhere that said they still were fighting over that. I kind of tend to believe Kristi just because... Maybe because I know her, and she was pretty sure she had a number that was going to the Congressional Budget Office to get verified or changed, depending on what they kind of what their analysis would show. But her statement was that it would be about $10 billion worth of cuts over 10 years. That was the committee's estimate, and then the Congressional Budget Office will put a firm figure on that. And so that sounded pretty definite to me. The thing that I have read that is really sticking is fights between these different, they call it, it's the commodity title, and that's your corn, your soybeans, but if you're from the South, it's cotton and other crops, and there's disagreements amongst those interest groups, and those lobbyists are kind of, I think I read a national report that described it as a war. So you can imagine some pretty tense conversations going on behind the scenes in Washington on that front. But it's my sense of it, and again, this is a case where almost everything I know I read in the national press, my sense of it is that they're down to that commodity issue, and they're hammering out the details. But it does sound like they're getting work done. It sounds like the House and the Senate are working together, which is a huge, has been a huge issue on this and a lot of other issues. So I think we're going to get into January, and we're going to get this thing done, and we'll just have to wait and see what the specifics are showing.
Last week was Kristi Noem optimistic that the farm bill would be reached, pretty sure?
She was. She too said that by the end of the year was probably unlikely, but right after the beginning of 2014, she thought they could get it. She just didn't think there was enough time for the procedural stuff to where you pass it through both of the House and the Senate and then get it to the president for a signature. Given the days that they're going to be in session, she thought that was unlikely, but she said the agreements are being reached behind the scenes, and then the passage of the legislation and the signing is the formality of finishing it up.
Well, Jonathan Ellis, with the bipartisan budget compromise reached by congressional negotiators, is that encouraging that the farm bill compromise can be eventually reached? I think that's one of the things that Denise was just saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do have to, if Paul Ryan can, and Senate Democrats, Patty Murray in the Senate, I mean, if they can, I mean, those two are pretty far apart on fiscal matters. I mean, if they can come up with an agreement, you know, it tells you that they're at all sides. You know, for the most part, a lot of them are trying to work together. I mean, you know, there's a question whether or not that budget agreement would be able to pass through the House, so that's still an open question. But, yeah, I would think that there's some optimism then that a farm bill can get done. And as Denise said, I mean, you know, that $10 billion figure is one that's been out there for a long time in terms of what Senate Democrats would be willing to accept in cuts to the food stamp program. And as Denise said, I mean, there is, and again, I'm reading from people in Washington, but there are, you know, some of the southern interests are taking another run at trying to get some, you know, the direct subsidies and other things that had been taken out of both the House and Senate versions. They're trying to get those things put back in. And so, you know, the farm bill is often it's not just Democrat, Republican, those issues. It's often regional competition in terms of certain regions wanting more out of the farm bill and others resisting. So that's, I think, probably a lot of some of the holdup. And frankly, on the farm bill as well, it's kind of funny when we talk about the scoring in the CBO, but one of the reports, a couple reports I've read, is that one of the key CBO, Congressional Budget Office analysts, who was supposed to help put all of this and determine how much savings there was going to be, was actually marooned by a snowstorm. So that's one of the reasons why they just couldn't get it done this week. So I don't get a sense that there's a huge emergency or people are fretting about this. Everybody seems to be pretty calm that this is going to get done in January. And the question was, over the extension, is there going to be an extension? And Democrats say it's just not necessary. So let's move on.
With the budget compromise again, and what seems like that we're going to reach an agreement on the farm bill, does it seem, Jonathan, that maybe the environment in Washington has changed after what happened a couple of months ago?
You know, I haven't been there since then. I mean, you know, I do get the sense that people are kind of sitting down and trying to work with each other. And I think Paul Ryan had an interesting line yesterday in introducing this, saying, you know, when you have divided government, nobody's going to get everything they want. And that's something that particularly House Republicans, I think, that's a message that they've resisted. I mean, they've tried to get everything. And I've pointed out in my writing that when you just control one House of the legislative branch, I mean, you can't get everything you want. And so I think that was an interesting line from Paul Ryan, and certainly, you know, I mean, both sides have to move incrementally. And, you know, you kind of get what you can, given the state of how we're governed right now, and try to consolidate in the next election.
Denise, do you see that maybe there's a change in Washington?
Well, there appears to be, you know, there's some populist anger, and I think the politicians are hearing that and are responding to it. It kind of reminds me of some tried and true phrases that get thrown around in PIR a lot, and one of those is "don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good," and that's an argument that's often thrown out to a holdout lawmaker who just wants everything exactly the way they want it. And the rest of the members will say, you know, you're going to get most of what you want. And the other term that they say is half a loaf. You're going to have to take half a loaf on this one. You're not going to get the whole loaf. And so that's a situation, and it's the hallmark of politics, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, that you're never going to get everything you want. If you want that, then you got to go live in a dictatorship and become the dictator. And I don't think very many Americans want to do that.
Yesterday, the U.S. House passed a bill that would halt the potential closure of the Hot Springs VA hospital. Kristi Noem voted in favor of that bill, and this has been a controversial issue in the Black Hills. Denise, you're in Rapid City. What is at stake here, and why is this such a tense issue?
Well, I think there's a lot of factors. You've got Hot Springs, which is a community that is not growing. It's aging. It's one of the oldest communities in the state. And so you've got community leaders there who are, you know, if they lost the VA, they would lose a major piece of their community, and then I think you'd see the community start to decline. You've got veterans, a lot of them from Pine Ridge, where Hot Springs is quite a convenient place for them to go if they need that kind of medical treatment. And so I think it's just some very committed people. In that state, or that, not the state veterans home, that's the other thing down there, but that VA facility has been down there. It's a beautiful building. It's got so much history tied up into it. And so I think there's just a lot of emotion running through there, and then some very real economic concerns from the community, and some very real concerns from the veterans about how far they're going to have to travel, how far they'll be away from home, and that kind of thing.
If the legislation is passed by the Senate and signed by President Obama, does that mean the Hot Springs VA Hospital will stay open, or what does this mean for the future? If that's again what actually happens,
I presume that's the case. I am not quite familiar, but if the bill says you can't close the Hot Springs VA, then they can't close the Hot Springs VA. I'm pretty impressed that got through the House. That's an interesting. It's an interesting development. I think it'll get the attention of the VA people for sure.
Moving on into other political news, Jonathan, in your Sunday column, you wrote that former Governor Mike Rounds' Senate campaign is bracing for some turbulence. This is in connection with the recent revelations over the Northern Beef Packers plant and the EB-5 investor program. Although there's a lot that's unknown, has the Rounds campaign had to undergo any damage control yet?
Well, I think to some extent they have. I mean, you know, I'll give Mike Rounds credit here. I mean, he has been available to answer questions to both myself and my colleague David Montgomery whenever we've had them about how this program worked, what his role was in it, how they settled on Richard Benda, for example, as a secretary. I mean, he has made himself available to explain these issues. You know, the turbulence comes from the fact that something happened here where this money got diverted and it shouldn't have, and this happened under your watch. And, you know, this contract that was signed that handled these EB-5, the group that handled the EB-5 investments, which had been, you know, done by the state essentially, that was privatized under his when he was governor. So, you know, a lot of this, you know, what's the federal investigation going to say? I mean, we know there's a federal grand jury investigating this. What are they going to come up with? And so, you know, this stuff happened while he was governor, and you know, potentially depending on what comes out, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, his opponents have already seized on this to some extent, trying to, you know, label him as, you know, I mean, this is, labeling him as corrupt. I mean, they're saying that he was, you know, he was part of a corrupt administration. Okay, so you know, his opponents have certainly seized on that. Certainly, Democrats have as well, and they're using it, you know, to not only, you know, potentially, you know, cast aspersions onto Mike Rounds, but also, you know, Dennis Dugard and Marty Jackley as well. I mean, they've said that they don't trust the investigation that Marty Jackley's office conducted, and they've asked for a quote special prosecutor, which is something that's kind of a Washington. We're familiar with a special prosecutor from Washington, but yeah, you know, and Marty Jackley has declined to do that, even though I think legally he probably could. I mean, the South Dakota law allows him to appoint quote special assistants for special projects, but. You know, so Democrats and the opponents of Mike Rounds are certainly using this, and depending on what else comes out, yeah, I mean, this is not going to be good for his campaign.
But Denise Ross, do you think Rounds' opponents should take advantage of and use in their campaigns?
Well, I think they will, and I suppose it would be malpractice, political campaign malpractice, if they did not maximize this to their advantage, especially because of his substantial lead. But that's where transparency would really benefit him as a candidate, and I'm an advocate for that just as a general rule of thumb. But, you know, they're not releasing some details. They're letting a couple of reporters look at that. They could release that publicly, and then everyone would have a chance to look at it, and that would kind of take the pressure off, because what's driving this now is the mystery and the intrigue. There's so many unanswered questions, and people's minds are just running wild with the possibilities. The rumors about what happened down in Lake Andes, where Richard Benda's body was found, are just all over the map of what people are thinking could have happened. So if they just release everything they possibly can, I think that would be the best route in terms of helping Mike Rounds' candidacy and serving the public well.
Jonathan, do you agree that would be the best way to serve the public?
Transparency is always for the best, Carl. Always. Yep.
Do you think there'll be any fallout for future economic development partnerships from this?
I would imagine that within the EB-5 program itself, potentially there would be. You know, I mean, if you're one of these wealthy foreign investors, do you want to loan or put up money into a venture when there's maybe this track record? You know, Northern Beef wasn't the only one that has gone belly up. You know, there's a couple of dairies as well that were reliant on EB-5 money. I mean, among them, I think there probably maybe would be some reluctance. On the other hand, you know, I've heard that some of these foreign investors just want their green card, and so $500,000 is a price they're willing to pay. If they lose it, they lose it. I mean, you know, you just hear these different things. I haven't spoken to any of the Korean or Chinese investors who put $500,000 into Northern Beef, so I don't know what their motivation was.
Denise, do you think there'll be any fallout for future economic development partnerships in the state?
I think it will continue to be a political issue. It was before this story broke. The Democrats have pushed it. They put that issue on the ballot and won, saying that they didn't like Governor Dennis Dugard's economic plan that he'd pushed through the legislature. So I think this will just fuel that little boat along, and I'm sure there'll be bills, whether or not they'll pass this coming up legislative session, and we'll have to wait and see. And I think a lot will hinge, as Jonathan said, on what comes out of that federal grand jury investigation. It might be so loose. It might have been so loosely operated that they will have to tighten it up, or it might be an isolated case. And that's, again, we just don't know, and we have to wait to find out.
In other news, it was reported yesterday that State Representative Steve Hickey of Sioux Falls has changed his mind on the death penalty and will ask the 2014 state legislature to repeal capital punishment. Jonathan, since he's in your neck of the woods, what caused him to change his mind, and does this fit with some of his other positions?
You know, arguably it does. I mean, some people who we all know that Steve Hickey is anti-abortion. He's a pro-life lawmaker, and a lot of people, a lot of people argue that if you're pro, if you're against abortion, you should also be against capital punishment. From reading what Steve said, he thinks that quote was, just putting somebody peacefully to sleep is not as much punishment as making them, serve out a sentence in prison, a life sentence. And he also said that, when you compare, the United States with other countries that still have capital punishment, we're on a list with some pretty unsavory countries that we probably shouldn't be on a list with. So, and I'm not, we know Steve Hickey's a pastor, and I think that for some evangelicals who are opposed to capital punishment, I think that, no matter how heinous a crime somebody may be committed to get on capital punishment, I mean, they still feel that people should have a chance at redemption on some level. So, it doesn't really surprise me that, he would, given his reputation, that he would, rethink that issue.
Denise Rott, do you think a repeal of the death penalty in South Dakota is very likely?
I would have to say unlikely, but this coming from the right as it does, I think you will maybe see some more reflection than if it was coming from the left. That's just a guess. These social issues are emotional for people, and I don't think they easily change their mind. So I will be surprised if he succeeds, but I think we'll probably have a very healthy debate about it in this state.
Well, finally, Jonathan, last week CNN was in Sioux Falls working on a story. In your Argus Leader blog, you wrote that city officials were freaking out. Why was that?
Well, they didn't want word to get out, and so they'd sent out an email to department directors and other employees saying that if any local media people called to find out about what CNN is doing, don't tell them anything. And, it was, which is kind of funny because when they find out, we're working on a story, they'll have a press conference or something and it'll blow the story up. So, kind of a double standard there. But, it was just, the story from everything I've heard is it's something that's going to run, early next year. And Sioux Falls, frankly, has been the focus of this and a few national stories about how Sioux Falls is a community that's been doing pretty well, in terms of, weathering the economic downturn and coming out of it pretty strong. And so I think that, from my understanding, this is going to be another sort of national story in which Sioux Falls is one of these communities where things are going pretty well in the United States.